Good afternoon. My co-authors and I don't have any disclosures to share. So this is actually great timing that I'm in the last session because we've spent a lot of time setting up for the discussion. So I wanted to spend just a little bit of time talking about clean indoor air policies, which hasn't been the focus of our discussion today. So these are any type of policy, law, ordinance that restricts smoking in workplaces, and I'm focusing specifically about bars and restaurants, so I'm going to refer to all these policies generally as clean indoor air policies. So if you're not familiar, this is a depiction of the U.S. and the prevalence of these policies. I'll be focusing on St. Paul, Minnesota today. So I want to talk a little bit about some of the consequences of clean indoor air policies. There's been extensive research done on clean indoor air policies in communities around the U.S. and internationally, and these studies have demonstrated that, as intended, clean indoor air policies are meant to reduce exposure to secondhand smoke in the workplace. And in fact, there are many studies demonstrating that there's significant improvements in indoor air quality after these policies are enacted. There have also been numerous studies looking at health-specific outcomes, both for workers and the general public, and we have good data to suggest that banning smoking in these workplaces helped to reduce respiratory symptoms, as well as some interesting evidence looking at in numerous communities now on reduced rates of hospitalization due to acute myocardial infarction, as well as some hospitalization data for pediatric asthma. So again, the intent of these policies is to reduce exposure to secondhand smoke, and we're seeing some health-related outcomes in both the workplace and the community. But there are some unintended consequences of these clean indoor air policies, and those specifically relate to smoking-related changes. That's not the intent of these policies specifically, but when you look at studies that have been done in communities, we've actually demonstrated that there's been, in some communities to a certain degree, there's been reduced cigarette consumption demonstrated, as well as increased interest in cessation, as well as attempts, and reduced prevalence. And there's emerging evidence that youth smoking progression and initiation may be impacted by the establishments of these policies. So again, these are not the intent specifically of clean indoor air policies, but are unintended consequences. And I want to mention also that there's been discussion about whether or not banning smoking in bars and restaurants in particular have had negative economic outcomes, and extensive studies have been done on this that there have been no significant changes in sales revenue or employment in these particular settings. So even though banning smoking in these places are not showing significant changes for these sites in particular. So as the previous presentations have mentioned, there's an established relationship between tobacco and alcohol use, and I just wanted to mention that the ease of access, as well as the legality of the products and the social context, help to influence this association, which is why we think that making a ban on smoking while tobacco products are still illegal, the change in the social environment is an important thing for us to evaluate. So I want to talk a little bit about why smoking restrictions or clean indoor air policies might be associated with crime. And so essentially, compliance with clean indoor air policies, which has been demonstrated in bars and restaurants, there's generally very high degree of compliance, above 90 to 95% in communities that have studied compliance. So there's generally very good compliance with these policies. So this means smokers have to stand outdoors. They have to stand outside of these bars and restaurants. And the crime potentials theory really says that this increases the opportunity for smokers to be both the target or the perpetrator of crime around these businesses. So as you may be familiar, these pictures just demonstrate that people go outside to smoke, and in an urban environment, they're really just on the street. So we also know that as density increases of alcohol-licensed businesses, there's a higher density of crime, or there's a higher prevalence of crime. And we know that alcohol consumption may increase risk of certain types of crimes. Some studies have suggested that a very high degree of street offenses involve alcohol. People involved in the crimes have been drinking alcohol. And that many of these sort of street crimes are likely to be near alcohol-licensed businesses. So this is why this question came into being of whether or not there may be an association between pushing smokers out into the street in compliance with these policies and an increase in crime. So there's been anecdotal evidence of this particular question. People in the lay public and in the press have made claims saying that there have been increases in crime associated with clean indoor air policies. But no studies have been done to evaluate whether or not these changes have been, you know, if they're anecdotes or if there's any evidence to suggest that banning smoking in bars and restaurants may be associated with changes in crime. So that's what we set out to do. We wanted to evaluate whether there were changes in alcohol-related crime increase after the adoption of a clean indoor air policy, and we focused on the city of St. Paul, Minnesota. So again, here's the question. We were interested in looking at the community in St. Paul, Minnesota, and looking before and after a local clean indoor air policy was adopted. For those unfamiliar, St. Paul is the capital of Minnesota. It has almost 300,000 residents, and it forms half of the Twin Cities metro area, which is the 15th largest metropolitan area in the U.S. And a local clean indoor air policy was adopted March 31st, 2006, and that applied to both bars and restaurants. So in order to conduct this comparison, we collected all crime data for a five-year period between 2003 and 2007 from the St. Paul Police Department. And we looked at crimes that we deemed to be alcohol-related, and we categorized those into both serious and less serious alcohol-related crimes, and I'll talk about that in the next slide. And then the police department actually geocodes each individual crime either to a specific address where a crime occurred, or in the case of to protect identities of individuals, an intersection, the nearest intersection. So we had a geocode for address or intersection for every single crime. So as I mentioned, we categorized crimes into alcohol-related serious and less serious crimes. So the serious crimes were things like murder, rape, aggravated assault, etc. And the less serious crimes were categorized as assault, minor assault, noise violations, public consumption, disorderly conduct, essentially fighting, etc. So what we did using GIS is that we took every single one of the crimes that occurred in this five-year period, and we drew a buffer around all alcohol-licensed businesses in the city of St. Paul, which was almost 400 businesses. This was specifically for on-premise consumption, so this isn't the liquor store, this is a bar or a restaurant, a place that's licensed to sell alcohol for consumption on site. So we took all those crimes and we determined whether or not they were within 1,500 feet of an alcohol-licensed business. Then we subdivided that buffer into within a 500-foot distance of an alcohol-licensed business. We devised that distance based to capture crimes that might spill over from a storefront, not just immediately in front of a bar, but into the nearby neighborhood without going too far. And the remaining distance, so between 500 and 1,500 feet, was used to capture sort of trends in crime that were taking place over this five-year period. And we had a 100% success rate for all of the geocoding of both businesses and crimes. So here's an illustration. So the red star represents a single bar, and the green space would be the buffer around that business, and the additional purple space is that 1,500-foot buffer. So we used an interrupted time series analysis to account for both seasons of the year, because crimes do have a seasonal element, as well as overall crime trends. And we summarized the crimes by week, because some of the, especially the serious crimes, didn't have a daily frequency, and that would allow us to capture both weekday and weekend. So we had 261 weeks in our study. And we looked at serious and less serious crimes separately. So over this five-year period, there were over 150,000 alcohol-related crimes that occurred. And within the 500-foot buffer, we had almost 24,000 serious alcohol-related crimes and almost 50,000 of the less serious alcohol-related crimes. Again, this is over a five-year period, lest you think St. Paul is a terribly dangerous place to be. So these are unadjusted frequencies by week. This is the less serious alcohol-related crime. You can see summertime is a great time to be involved in less serious alcohol-related crime. So there's a big peak during that period, so there is a highly seasonal element. The green line represents the crimes that were within that 500-foot buffer of an alcohol-licensed business, and the gray line is beyond. And the dashed line represents when that clean indoor air policy was adopted at the city level. And again, same thing, the blue line represents the crimes within 500 feet, and this is for the serious alcohol-related crimes. Less of a seasonal element here, which is not a big surprise. So what we found after we evaluated this using an interrupted time series approach and that accounted for both the overall trend in crime and seasons of the year, there was no statistically significant association between the local clean indoor air policy and either type of crime. Based on our estimates, there were 6.4 more serious alcohol-related crimes per week, but the confidence interval, as shown here, is not significant, and 34 more of the less serious alcohol-related crimes per week, again, non-significant confidence interval. So we believe that these results represent the first investigation into a clean indoor air policy crime linkage. And we think this provides empirical evidence that banning smoking in this particular setting was not associated with a significant change in crime. In particular, we hypothesized an increase in crime, and we did not detect that. So we believe this supports the continued use of clean indoor air policies as a means to protect the public from exposure to secondhand smoke, which is what these policies are intended to do. But when you have a null finding, there are always important considerations to take into account when you're interpreting them. So one of the things that is a great strength is that we have robust statistical power for an interrupted time series analysis, and that's based on the number of weeks of study that we had. So that's a real strength here. And we have reason to believe that the local clean indoor air policy had a high degree of compliance in the city of St. Paul. Although we weren't able to capture that data specifically, we have good relationships with the local health department who deals with all the complaints and the inspections. So we have good reason to believe that the compliance is generally high. But what we don't have here is we don't actually know the alcohol involvement in each one of the crimes because the data is fairly inconsistent in the police reports of whether or not alcohol was involved. So we devised a strategy to characterize alcohol-related crimes, but we can't confirm that alcohol was involved in each one of the crimes here. So it's really a more of an ecological approach. So another thing to think about is the fact that decreasing smoking prevalence in Minnesota, which was occurring over this period, might mitigate potential effects of this clean indoor air policy crime interaction. So just a few other considerations. I just want to talk about the fact that clean indoor air policies remain a target for industry and interest groups. I love this slide of people protesting a local clean indoor air policy, so let the owners decide. But some of the negative health consequences that are due to this interplay, which we've been talking about all afternoon today, between tobacco and alcohol, really persist as a public health concern and warrants additional efforts and energy to study this association. And I want to underscore the fact that policy and environmental change strategies that help promote public health are really a valuable asset into public health practice. And I think that these results are a valuable tool to consider when you have groups that are actively opposing clean indoor air policies, which we see in Minnesota and any other community that's adopted this level of policy. So I wanted to acknowledge my collaborators here and state our funding from Clearway Minnesota. And here's my contact information. I'd be happy to answer any questions. Thank you.